This is the Seahawkers podcast. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, and today we are talking NFL draft, and I'm doing it with my guest, Joe DeLeon. He is the college football and NFL draft analyst on the Believe Podcast Network, a former long snapper for the University of Rhode Island Rams, where he was a two-time CAA Football Commissioner's Academic Honor Roll member, and he's also the super producer for my favorite Dolphins podcast. Welcome to Perfectville. He's Joe DeLeon. How you doing?
I'm doing great. That was that intro got me all juiced up. I also like to add the two academic All-Americans or All-Conference, and also two-time personal foul recipient when I was in college too.
Which two is, personal fouls?
Yeah, as a long snapper. You know, you have to be really hot-headed to get
really impressive. Okay, well then, before we get into the draft content, I have to imagine you remember exactly how those fouls went down and what you did to occur such foul.
Yeah, I always like to bring that up because it's one of the funniest achievements of playing college football. I didn't do much else, but I had those two personal fouls. But they were both, as you might expect for me being a long snapper, I got hit late. I got up, and ref doesn't see me get hit, but they see me retaliate and, you know, shove or punch the two guys I did it against. Well, first one was against Maine, and the second one was against Merrimack. So those are my two wonderful.
Both of them were retaliation fouls.
Yeah, which stinks. And I played hockey, so you'd think I'd be a little smarter than that to know that, like, it's always the guy who retaliates, not the guy who initiates. But no, it's always funny to bring that up.
Well, and to pair it too with the academic honor roll too. I think that makes a nice combination.
Right. Oh, right. Exactly. It's the complete polar opposite. You wouldn't expect one to go with the other, but studious yet hot-headed is the way I like to put it.
Well, we'll see if you get any retaliation from Seahawks fans with your latest mock draft that came out. You've got the Seahawks picking at number 5. And so we know where we are in this, because there's some people who are looking at the top 5 as potentially 3 quarterbacks going in the top 5. Others have 3 defensive linemen going in the top 5. And in this mock draft of yours that I saw, Joe, you've got Miles Murphy as the last defensive lineman of the 3 available to the Seahawks there at number 5. Miles Murphy of Clemson going to the Seahawks with CJ Stroud off the board, Bryce Young off the board, and of course, Jalen Carter and Will Anderson, which I think Seahawks fans would be stoked if either of those guys happened to slip to 5. And I suppose there's a route for it with that potential for quarterbacks going in the top 5.
Right. So when I did that mock draft, it was early enough in the process and it was pre-Super Bowl where I intended not to do any trades. And I think I'm going to probably start working in some trades going forward now that we're post-Super Bowl, the combine's coming up, and we're kind of in the heat of it. And I think trades are more important than ever in this year's draft because, as you talked about, with all those quarterbacks, people are going to be moving up. Teams are going to be moving up to go and get guys. So in a realistic situation, I think a guy like Will Anderson or Jalen Carter are going to be on the board for the Seattle Seahawks if they don't have an intention to get in that fight for one of the quarterbacks. So for me here with no trades, Miles Murphy made a ton of sense. You miss out on those top 2 guys. And I think Miles Murphy is just a really talented, stout player in his career at Clemson. And he just has always been one of the most consistent players in college football. You see some of these other guys popping up ahead of him throughout the process, especially Tyree Wilson from Texas Tech has been a recent riser as of late. But I just think if you're trying to build out that defense, a lot of positive things have happened so far for that young group for the Seattle Seahawks. So you add another guy in that's going to be a potential high-quality playmaker. I think Miles Murphy fits that description.
Do you see him as top 5 talent, or is this based on need with those 2 other defensive players off the board by number 5?
I think it's mostly need, but the way that I look at this class is that after we get through, in my eyes, the top 4 players, which are Jalen Carter, Will Anderson, which are 1A, 1B, and then Bryce Young, CJ Stroud as the top 2 quarterbacks, it's a real who's who. It's who values who higher. And I think that there's going to be a wide array of opinions for those picks up until draft time. I don't think that there is a consensus for any of those guys. I think Miles Murphy's good enough to be selected that high, but there's just like everybody in that top 10, top 15 bunch, I don't think there's much separation. Like, I don't think there's significant enough separation, and Miles Murphy just for me is the better fitting need. Now, I will say though, if I'm the Seahawks, I do think that they should consider taking a quarterback if they're in the position to do so. And I know that you guys as Seahawks fans are optimistic on Geno, and I know that he had a great year last year. I know that he's a big reason why they were still able to get to the playoffs, even though Russell Wilson wasn't there anymore. But at the same time, he's an older quarterback. You got to inject a little bit of youth into the position group, and you got to start looking ahead to the future because you might not be picking this high for very long. You know, they got the opportunity because of the trade that they acquired the pick, and you got to use that pick with the opportunity that you're given.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people before the season thought this would be the actual Seahawks pick rather than the Broncos pick. So a little bit fortunate for this to still be a top five pick, even though the Broncos did win that final game to push us just outside of that top four, which may end up being kind of a bummer if you really see those as being the four top guys. You said that you kind of like a quarterback for the Seahawks. Now, I could see making the case for it. Geno Smith, maybe he's asking for too much money. Franchise tag makes a lot of sense in that scenario. I know Daniel Jones for the Giants asking for quite a bit of money too. So maybe franchise tag makes sense there too. I know you mentioned to me that you're a Giants fan. So maybe there are some similarities in this case. Now the Giants don't have a pick in the top 10, but would you make a similar case for your Giants team if they were in a similar position?
I think there's a big difference though between Daniel Jones and Geno Smith, because Geno's at his ceiling. Geno's not going to get any better because of how old he is and how long he's been in the league. And again, a great credit to how he performed. I think he had a great season, well outplayed the expectations. There was even a debate at the beginning of the year that Drew Lock was going to be the guy. But at the same time, Daniel Jones has so many more years of development to go. And that was like the biggest frustration for Giants fans and me in particular, is that he wasn't taking those steps in his development, but you could see that the ceiling was there. And I think this was the first positive year of him taking a massive leap forward and him showing that he's a great athlete. He can impact the game as a runner. And if he can kind of put together a little bit more of his tools as a passer with some added help, if they trade for a receiver or draft a receiver, he could improve. So I don't think that those situations are comparable.
Yeah, what I'm hearing is you're upset that the Giants didn't hold on to Geno Smith long enough because they had the opportunity. I get it.
That's exactly it. I mean, it'd be cheaper than paying the $35 million that he's asking for. And I think that that's an outrageous number to pay him because he hasn't done anything. He hasn't proven anything.
He's had the 1 year. So it I think the franchise tag could make sense, or there could be a deal that gets worked out. We'll have to see. I think totally. Staying in Seattle makes a lot of sense for him. But if that doesn't work out, there are options at quarterback. And what do you like about this class? Is this class, could you compare it to the 2021 class, or do you see that as a step above or below?
I think it's definitely a step below from the 2021 group, because the amount of talent that came out amongst those guys, there just was so much to work with. But I think the reason why there's such a difference is that this year there's no consensus. There's no like, this is the guy. This is the top clear-cut
Trevor
guy.
Trevor was the guy in 2021.
Right. No one was debating that. And then at the same time, there was still like conversations where a lot of guys fit in that top 10. Some guys slid. I think now what we're looking at with this grouping is that there's a debate of, okay, are you willing to risk the size issues with Bryce Young and hope that he doesn't get hurt? Does he bulk up? Does he end up getting up to the build of a Russell Wilson? Can CJ Stroud play better than what Justin Fields has done, which has shown an inability to process and read things in front of him because he was playing in the same offense that didn't ask him to do those things? And that's a legitimate concern of mine for him as a prospect. And then the other added fold to this is for those that love Will Levis. And from what I keep hearing from different people is that the NFL really likes Will Levis. And there's some teams at the top that don't like the other guys because of their build. And they're obsessed with Will Levis because he's this big, strong kid. He's got a big arm and he's got a really high ceiling. And then it also can add in the fact that Anthony Richardson's a really raw, toolsy player who's a few years away, but still has a ton of potential. But I think this class has a lot more depth, I think, than that 2021 group, but overall is not as top heavy in the sense where it doesn't have that clear cut top player like the 2021 grouping had with Trevor Lawrence.
Where do you see the strengths in this 2023 class?
It has to be on the defensive line. I look at edge and I look at defensive tackle. There are a lot of options to go with both groupings. And you look at two guys for defensive tackle that fit in the top 15, Brian Brzee and Jalen Carter, of course. And then at edge, Luke Van Ness from Iowa. You've also got Tyree Wilson from Texas Tech, Miles Murphy, who we talked about, and then Will Anderson, who I think is far and away one of the best players in the class right up against Jalen Carter. But there are so many different options, I think, not only at the top to go with at defensive tackle and at edge, but as we start working our way back until, you know, the second round, third round, there's a lot of depth. And we saw that at the Senior Bowl with guys like Keanu Benton, who might now be a first round pick, Will McDonald, who had a really good showing at the Senior Bowl, who might now be a first round pick. And then I've got guys like Byron Young and Zach Pickens, who are going to fit really well and nicely in this class. It's just a lot of really good depth, a lot of really elite talent at the top. So definitely has to be along that defensive line at edge and defensive tackle.
Let's talk about Keanu Benton a little bit, because I know just looking back at the Seahawks history, they really do like guys who stand out at the Senior Bowl. They've picked several guys with their top picks who performed well there. And it sounds like Benton kind of fits that bill, and it fits a team need as well.
Yeah, my excitement with Keanu Benton is that we got to see his real role when he was at the Senior Bowl. So at Wisconsin, he primarily played as a nose tackle, and he actually was hurt for a period of time, so wasn't really fully healthy for a lot of the season for Wisconsin. And we knew how up and down the year was for the Badgers this year going through a coaching change. And he heads over to the Senior Bowl. He's playing mostly as a three technique, and he showed off the power that he has. But on top of that, an ability to rush the passer. He's got really quick, explosive hands. I think he can be a really dangerous three technique at the next level. He's somebody who I believe was the best player at the Senior Bowl, had a little bit of a slow third day during the practices, but still was just kicking everybody's butt during these one-on-one drills. He was dominating the offensive lineman that he was going up against. And I think far and away the biggest riser for me, and somebody who back end of the first round, early second, could very well see him getting drafted that high.
Who are some of the other standouts for you at the Senior Bowl?
Yeah, another defensive lineman, Ade Odebuare from Northwestern, who's making the transition from edge to defensive tackle. And we saw that pass rush prowess that he brings to the table that he has as an edge rusher. And he's bulked up. I think he's trying to get up to 280 right now. And he's going to be another player who, a little more compact, very wide. It's just so hard to block. I also have to throw in there Diane Henley, a linebacker from Washington State, who in a way kind of gives me those Seattle Seahawks vibes, where he's just an older player, very technically sound, knows where he needs to be. But for me at the Senior Bowl, he opened my eyes to just how explosive he is. And then on top of that, how good he is as a blitzer, how good he can be in pass coverage, did a lot of really nice things, and I think was the best linebacker there. And the last one, I know that the Seahawks aren't really in the market for a running back, but if they're interested in him, Tyjae Spears from Tulane has been a really eye-catching guy. He did so well at the Senior Bowl that like I didn't even have on my short list of running backs to watch, and I watched him, and he was good enough to sneak into the back end of my top five of my running backs. And he showed really great vision. He showed really great patience. And then I think just in general, a guy who's slippery, really hard to tackle, super elusive. The one comp, and I can't take credit for it, a lot of people have thrown out there the Aaron Jones comp for Tyjae Spears. And I think he's got that potential to be just a really good either secondary back or maybe even turn himself into a primary back for certain teams.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear you talk about the running backs, because I talked to Jim Nagy going into the Senior Bowl, and one of the things that we talked about is, you know, just how difficult it is usually to recruit guys to the Senior Bowl, because most of those guys, once they make a name for themselves in college, you know, they're going out their junior year, maybe even sooner.
Right. And the other thing, too, is evaluating running backs at the Senior Bowl is even harder, because during practices, it's all thud. Nobody's right. Getting wrapped up and brought to the ground. So it's hard to figure out, like, how do guys play through contact? How do they avoid tackles? How can they actually break tackles, because they're not getting hit in those circumstances? But I think that he worked past that, and he showed a lot of really long, big plays where he was just reading the field in front of him and completely avoiding contact. And I think that's what makes him so great.
Well, one other guy I wanted to get your opinion on while we're on the defensive line, Carl Brooks, who the interesting thing about him is that he's 300 pounds, but he played some outside linebacker in college. Now, I think with the size, he's expected to move inside. But did you pick up anything on him while at the Senior Bowl?
Yeah, Carl Brooks was an early performer for me. Like, he really opened my eyes on day one. And then he kind of slowed down as the week progressed. First of all, by the way, I'm really disappointed he did not get a combine invite. And he was somebody who, shocking one. He was one of the most shocking snubs that didn't get invited to the combine. But like, he was one of those dudes on the first day, unblockable, really quick hands, really explosive hands, quick twitch. And again, he might have slowed down a little bit, but I think that he's got a lot of value as a later round, early day three guy coming out of Bowling Green.
Well, flipping over to the offensive line, the Seahawks could use some help there too, whether it's at center, whether it's at guard. Gabe Jackson last year was kind of a halftime player. Any offensive lineman that stood out to you?
Particularly at the Senior Bowl, you're saying?
Yeah, at the Senior Bowl in the interior, yeah.
Got it. John Michael Schmitz was the biggest one. Yeah. The center from Minnesota who everybody was clamoring about. And he has just been such a consistent player his whole career. And he showed up at the Senior Bowl and it was a lot of the same things. We're just consistently winning reps. He's not a guy that you watch and you're just wowed where he dominates somebody physically and he completely puts somebody in the dirt, but he's just really stout, really, really good technique. I also am a big fan of Steve Avila, who is a guard from TCU, played a little bit of center in his career, and I think he has the potential to play both, and he did play both when he was at the Senior Bowl. And he's just another guy with a really powerful, strong anchor, really heavy feet that just plant into the ground. Not the quickest guy, you know, not somebody who's going to get to the next level and probably not going to work too well in his own scheme, but Steve Avila, very, very big fan of his, and I think that those were probably the two of the biggest winners from the Senior Bowl.
And of those two, I know this past week you tweeted that the guard class for the 2023 draft, well, and John Michael Schmidt, not a guard, but are those guys in your top four? Because you said after about four guys, it's really underwhelming. So after Avila, what are the three other names or is he in those top four names?
Yeah, I do have Avila as my second guy right now. At the top is Osiris Torrence, who also did look good at the Senior Bowl. Right. The guard from Florida who transferred from Louisiana with Billy Napier. After that, I do have McClendon Curtis from Chattanooga and Jackson Kirkland a little bit after him. And I just think after we get past even McClendon Curtis, who is an FCS guy, very raw player who's got a lot of tools to work with, it does start to get really underwhelming. And like one of the, I think, most confusing ones for me is the hype around Andrew Voorhees, who is the guard from USC. He's a sixth-year player. He's at his ceiling already. He's already, you know, at the point where he's developed. And he shows really good technique. Like, you see that this is a guy who's been around for a while, but he lunges a ton. He's not very twitchy or flexible or really that fluid or, frankly, doesn't drive guys off the ball. Like, I don't see a ton of strength from a guy like that with a maxed-out frame at over 320 pounds is what he's listed at. So I think once we start getting into talking about those guys like Andrew Voorhees or Brayden Daniels from Utah, Nick Breaker from Ole Miss, it does start to get a little bit watery, which is why I think either teams are going to try and draft guys that are tackles that they can bump inside to guard, or they do really need to invest in drafting one of these guys early. Otherwise, there's potential to miss out.
Could Cody Mock be one of those guys? I know he was another Senior Bowl invite. He played tackle, but I think he did play guard at Senior Bowl. And the reason why I bring him up is he was another guy that Jim Nagy mentioned, just based on personality, was kind of a fun guy. And I always like to have guys who are personalities on the team.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Cody Mock. And I went up and talked to him. And like, having played at the FCS level, cover the FCS, I always get excited to talk to these guys. And I went up and talked to him. He's just a funny guy where I asked him, like, if you weren't playing football, what would you be doing? And he said, like, oh, I'd be working on my family's farm. And he really gives that vibe, just like a big, strong kid, transition from tight end to offensive line. And you see that athleticism making that transition in the way that he moves. I don't really know where I want to fit him right now. And I'm leaning keeping him at tackle because he moves well enough. But I would not be surprised if a team doesn't draft him to play either position, see how he does in training camp, and then moving him inside. His week, though, at the Senior Bowl was a little bit up and down. It was not very consistent, but the flashes were very promising. And he's somebody late day two, I think, could be a very, very realistic pick for a lot of teams that are just looking for offensive line depth, whether it's guard, center, or tackle. I think he can play any of those positions.
I want to transition to talking about the combine because it is coming up. And the reason why I think it's most important for the Seahawks, especially, well, it's important for a number of reasons, because there are positions where they look at guys and their speed traits, and especially when it comes to, well, shoot, I mean, tight end, there's different traits where they're very on point with what they're looking for. But the one I'm thinking about is wide receiver, where mm-hmm. they only seem to take guys who run 4.3 40s. And I don't know necessarily why that is, because there can be guys who are good receivers that run in the 4.5s, but it's something I'll be looking for. Is there anybody that kind of meets that criteria who maybe you're excited about to see at the combine in terms of speed at the wide receiver spot?
Yeah, the two names I think to mention or to pay attention to, rather, that are going to run really fast times are Zay Flowers from Boston College and Josh Downs from North Carolina. They're very similar players, very similar builds, very similar speed profiles, just lightning fast. And I frankly, like to your point, I wouldn't be surprised if one of those guys isn't a Seattle Seahawk based on what you're talking about, where they're just so attracted to speed. And what we saw last year, I think it would help to add an extra piece to that receiving core. And you can't have too much speed. And the benefit with these two guys is that it's not like you're just drafting guys that are fast that don't have the production to back it up. They were very productive in college when they had the opportunities to, despite, maybe some quarterback issues for Zay Flowers and him not really having a consistent guy that was throwing him the ball. But in general, good route runners consistently create separation for the both of them. But I do expect them to test really well, a lot of really good short area quickness. They're probably going to be two of the freakier athletes at the combine.
Well, and Flowers, it's interesting. Just this week, Geno Smith on his Instagram was throwing footballs to Zay Flowers.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that. That's really interesting that maybe if he's there at in the second round, they better be praying that he is, because some early chemistry, you can't beat that out.
Well, we've got a late first rounder too. I'm not opposed to it. And he was really talking to EJ Snyder of Bootleg Football. He was kind of the standout at the Shrine game for them.
Yeah, and Zay Flowers was one of those guys where right now, the past couple of years, the East-West Shrine game has been going head-to-head with the Senior Bowl in terms of when it's happening. It used to be the week before, the top performers would then move up and then go to the Senior Bowl, but instead they're going head-to-head. The politics of that, I think it's kind of difficult to really dive into, but Zay Flowers was one of those guys that was supposed to be or could have been at the Senior Bowl, but opted and chose to participate at the East-West Shrine game. So him performing well, he dominated for a reason. He was one of the most talented guys that were there in Las Vegas. And again, top performer, because he's that good of a player. And I think very well could end up being a first round pick.
How about a guy who could be a solid special teamer? I'm thinking of punt return, kick return. Would either of the guys you mentioned or some other guys then jump into the mix? Because I really think that that's a spot where the Seahawks have been missing too.
Yeah, I think either of those guys fit that mold, but someone like Tank Dell from Houston, who's on the lighter side,
155 pounds, right?
Yeah, or well, I think he's listed at like 165, but okay. I wouldn't be surprised if he's lighter than that at the combine. But he's not a burner. He's right. Not somebody. He's fast, and there's a possibility. I was talking on my show today, actually, with my co-host Ryan Roberts, and he was saying that there's a potential for him to be in the 4.5 range, but he's really good lateral quickness. A really nice athlete, probably going to be the back end of a receiving room. And to that point, could be a really nice kick return just because he's got great open field vision. I think Tank Dell's an interesting name to pay attention to as a late round receiver if they're looking to add some depth.
Yeah, he's on my list just based off of, again, Senior Bowl standout type players. Yep. And I think it was day two where he kind of popped off for some people. And in day one too, I feel like I heard a lot of people just talking about his ability to change direction is elite.
Yes, very. Yeah, and that's what you look for with punt returners and kick returners is that short area quickness. How quickly can they create separation and find space for themselves? Because it's a lot of times you got guys coming downfield screaming at you where you got to react really quickly and create that space to pick up a couple of yards, even if it's 4 or 5 yards up to 10 on a kick return. that stuff can be game changing. That field position is really important. I think Tank Dell again is an interesting name to pay attention to that fits that description.
So with the quarterback situation, I want to go back to that because I would like to see the Seahawks at some point at least take a look at quarterback. I was surprised that they didn't even draft a quarterback in last year's draft. And with the combine coming up, is there anything that you're going to be looking at with the combine and this quarterback group?
Well, I'm definitely going to be locked in on the top of the class, seeing if it's going to be iffy on who throws. Right. CJ Stroud said on Pat McAfee that he's going to throw, which is really good to see. I'm hoping that Bryce throws. I just want to see the composure for those guys. And we know that they're very accurate quarterbacks. How does Will Levis do? You know, is he somebody who shows up and craps the bed because he's not a very consistent thrower, but he's going to have that one amazing throw that everybody's going to be oohing and aahing at. Anthony Richardson, his athletic testing is going to be fantastic. The one thing I think that's really crucial and should be on the radar for the Seattle Seahawks is the medicals for Hendon Hooker. Mm. And it seems like things are trending in a positive direction based on what he said during Senior Bowl week, where he's already starting to throw a little bit. If he gets medically tested and things are greenlit, I think a team like the Seattle Seahawks, maybe at the end of the first round or somewhere in the second round, is a name to pay attention to. I think he fits perfectly for a situation like Seattle, where if he hadn't gotten hurt, I would have had him ahead of Will Levis. Okay. I absolutely would have taken him ahead of Will Levis. And I haven't finished my final grading for these quarterbacks, but that might actually be where things shape out. But he's just got such great deep ball accuracy. He's such a great athlete. And I think that with his recovery, if he's got to recover for a couple of years, for a year, you can still rely on Geno. You're not spending a high draft pick on him. He's a guy who's been around. He's an older player, so he's more experienced. He'd be a good backup. And then eventually, when Geno moves on and however they want to handle that, they can immediately transition to Hendon Hooker and he can take over as a starting quarterback.
Is there an age where you look at that it's just too high that you want to go to for drafting a player? Because I feel like with some of these draft picks coming out of college that once a guy hits, I don't know, 24, people are very disinterested in drafting them, especially early.
For me personally, I think when you start getting to 24, that's when we start to have to ask questions and like, is it really worth it? Which is why I'm not like a big fan of all the Will Levis hype, is that everyone's like, wow, look at all his traits. If he hits the ceiling, he's going to be so good. He's like Josh Allen. Josh Allen was a lot younger when he came out compared to the 24-year-old Will Levis, and Anthony Richardson's 20 years old. So a similar situation where he's got a high ceiling. I'd rather bank on the younger guy, but I think 24 and 25, we just start getting into a sticky area, because if we just look at the lifespan of, separate from quarterbacks, the lifespan of most position players isn't that long. And especially for particular positions like linebacker, like running back, injuries tend to add up as you start getting closer to 30. So it's like, why would I draft the guy early if I only have possibly 5 years of a healthy lifespan of that guy? And also the risk of, has a certain player sustained enough injuries and or just enough hits, rather, that they could be injury prone in the NFL? I just think when you start getting over that 24 number, it does start to get really, really sketchy.
He's Joe DeLeon of the Believe Podcast Network. Joe, if people want to go and check out your draft content throughout this offseason, where do they go to find you?
You can find us on any podcast provider, NFL Prospects Pod, the Believe in NFL Draft Prospects Podcast. Also find us on YouTube. We're on Hack City on YouTube, which is just an all-encompassing college football NFL channel. And then also Believe Network on YouTube as well, where all the same content is featured as well as team-specific content. So just a lot of great stuff out there. I really appreciate you having me on. This was a blast and always excited to talk draft. And hopefully the Seahawks get some good picks.
Yes, we're looking forward to it. We at least have a lot to root for when it comes to the draft. So Joe, really want to thank you for coming on. And yeah, we're going to be looking for you here throughout the offseason, especially with the draft coming up. There's a lot of time between now and the draft. So really appreciate the time.
Of course. Thanks, Brad.
Go Hawks.